everybody, and welcome to Intellectually Shallow. No running, no diving, and no horseplay. Overanalyzing the mundane for not more than 5 episodes. Hey, welcome to the show, everybody. Say hi to Renee. Say hi, Renee.
Hi, everybody.
Excellent. So anything you have to say? Anything going on?
My show is still going, which is awesome.
Tell everybody what your show is.
I am stage managing for the production of Edges, which is a new musical, not yet on Broadway, but it definitely will be. It's a 4-man show, beautiful, beautiful original music. The performers are brilliant. Edges, if you go onto Facebook, you can just type in Edit Edges. We have a fan page, I think, and we have a couple other things that Travis takes care of. I don't do that. But yeah, that's the show. It's awesome.
Definitely send me the link and we can put it on the show notes.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's in Saco at the theater, City Theater, Biddeford City Theater.
Okay. We're going to start recording this again. Well, I want to start recording at Talk Shoe. So we're going to hear a little noise here.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Talk Shoe.
Recorded live. Okay, now, yeah, I forgot to push the button. Okay, so I went out to dinner today, or last week, Katahdin Restaurant.
Yes.
Great restaurant, the best onion rings I ever ate. I kind of go to school, I'm 40s, single, no kids, most of my peers have families and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't think they're all talking about their kids. I'm like, you guys spend a lot of time and effort on your kids. I'm like, there's got to be a better way than this. I'm thinking. And I was like, I'm like, you spend all this time and energy on your kids. And I guess it's worth it. But then, you have to work really hard and save all, And you have to work 3 times as hard to save enough money to put your kid in college.
True.
Right? Then you got to buy them crap. You got to buy them clothes. You got to buy them food. They want toys for Christmas. You got to buy them cool clothes so the other kids won't make fun of them. Because you don't deal with your kid coming home from school crying because all the other kids hate them.
Which does happen, unfortunately.
It does happen. So... I was thinking, I want to write this parenting book since I have no wife or children, so I'm eminently qualified to do this.
Of course.
The Catholic highest. Priests have been giving people relationship advice for hundreds of years, so why can't I be any different? Except I am not a child molester, so maybe I'm not qualified to know anything about kids.
Okay, so...
Just for the record.
Your philosophy on rearing children.
Yes. It's my new book. It's the Hail Mary School of Raising Kids. Instead of spending all that time and effort, right, when they're growing up, you throw the Hail Mary pass. You hand it off to the, you hand your kids off to the state. And then you work hard, you save your money, you invest it. Then when they turn 18, you can actually afford to put them in college.
Even though by then they have no idea who the hell you are.
Doesn't matter. They'll be wanting, there are a couple things. Really. And what are your qualifications for being a parent?
Some people apparently don't really need it. Well, most people don't need any.
And so, what are your qualifications for being a parent, really? Just because you had sex with somebody and someone would tolerate you for, the 3 minutes it took to have sex. and maybe they like you. Maybe they want to make, maybe they like owning a house and shit. But really, what's your qualifications? Have you studied to be a parent? No. So if you give your kids, make them wards of the state, right? Mm-hmm. They raise them. They take care of them. They buy them the clothes and food.
Mm-hmm.
Foster families, whatnot. Then you have all the time and energy to devote to making yourself wealthier and more. And then you could actually provide your kids with a decent college education.
Well, that's if they don't come out as psychopaths.
Well, and most of the time. And one thing about the people for the state, they're trained professionals. They went to school for this stuff. You did not.
Well, they went to school for some of it, but not all of it. Well, there's very little that they went to school for.
Well, more school than you, let's
in
put
the
it that
real
way.
World.
More school than you, if you want to put it that way.
Well, more school than me, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And me too. You know, I'm not a priest, so I can't. So,
I had a foster daughter for 2 years.
So. Oh, you did?
I did. It was an interesting experience.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, you have layers.
I have lots of layers.
You are like an onion here.
Yeah.
You know, you have a business, you work in a store, you're a nanny, you were a foster kid, you were a foster mom, you worked at the strip club.
Yep.
You have layers.
I have lots and lots of layers. I'm a pretty interesting person,
you know?
I think.
This is at least worth, I don't know, 10 or 15 episodes in and of itself.
Nice. Yeah, no, I got a foster kid. I was 20 years old. I already had temporary custody of my then 15-year-old sister.
Hmm.
And this happened to be a friend of hers who came over for a sleepover for a weekend and just sort of didn't go home.
And then decide she's going to live there.
And I was like, look, what's going on? And my sister finally told me, like, oh, you know, there's issues at home. Chantel's trying to figure things out. And my sister knew, like, my house is kind of a safe haven for a lot of the girls in the neighborhood with issues with parents and stuff like that. So I kind of gave the kid a benefit of the doubt. But I was like, eventually I'm going to have to speak to, like, an adult. Like, it's going to have to happen. And
so you became foster mom?
I became a foster mom, long story short. Yep. And DHS did a wonderful job of lying to me about exactly what it was that I was getting in this child.
Oh, what'd they say?
They didn't give me her whole story. I got that she was a kleptomaniac.
Mm-hmm.
I got that she was definitely on at least 2 drugs that they knew of, and cigarettes, they didn't even count a drug because that was like 3 packs a day at 15. I knew that there was a possibility of sexual abuse, but they didn't really give me the full story there. And I knew that mother had abandoned her and that grandmother had custody, but nobody was telling me why she wasn't with grandmother anymore. And then slowly as this kid is living with me, I start to find out everything. Like, you want to talk about drugs and boys and sleeping with and selling your body and alcohol. And this kid was addicted to everything by the time she was like 9.
Oh, so you had fun.
So by the time I got her, the fact that she was just doing pot, only smoking cigarettes and selling herself only so she could get high.
She was definitely on the path to recovery.
Yeah. So I've had some experience with DHS and that system. And
okay. So, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, but let's put it this way. If your kid comes out, it's a Hail Mary for sure. You are punting to the state.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you're going to be in the right spot at the end of the line.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called a Hail Mary.
Yep.
Hail Marys don't always work. They generally don't work in football. But let's put it this way. Your kid's in prison. You have a big chunk of money. Go on a nice vacation. Win-win. You know? Comes back a normal, well-adjusted, tough human being. The kid is tough as nails, and he will probably become president of the United States. You know, it's sort of like, that's why they call it the Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I call it the Hail Mary. Your kid is going to be president of the United States, or he's going to be in prison. So, you
never
know.
Quite know what you're going to get, so it's basically real life anyway.
No. Or they're going to be, or, you know, that's if your kid's a boy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
If it's a girl,
that's right.
That could be interesting.
That could be very different.
She could become one of two things, or three things.
A stripper.
A stripper. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
Reality show star.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know which is worse.
I don't either. Oh, gosh, don't get me started. Oh, Lord have mercy. Oh, that's awful. At least men have a shot at becoming something. Ugh.
But, you know, or you become like the what's her face? Who's the up? Who was, what was the movie with the, she was like the beauty queen. And she became like the paralegal.
Not Erin Brockovich.
That's it. Erin Brockovich. Bingo. now that I think about it more, you're definitely better off if it's,
A boy.
a boy. Mm-hmm. Unless you're really into grandkids.
Oh, gosh.
You might have grandkids a little earlier than you expect. You might be grandpa a little earlier than you expect.
Or grandma, and then you won't have to deal with being that poor woman from last week's story.
Okay. You won't have to hire anybody.
Oh, my gosh.
The state will pay you.
The state will pay you.
And you could become, what happens is then you could be the foster daughter, the foster mom of your grandchild.
There you go. There you go.
And then you get the check for $360 from the state.
There you go.
Work. See, there you go.
Everybody works out. It all works out.
It all works out in the end. You saved yourself time, money, and energy.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Grandma gets to have those grandbabies and money with them. Mm-hmm. Look at that.
There you go. And you don't have to worry about that pesky mom getting in the way.
She should have just moved to the United States and done that.
Because she's in prison.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, that's awful.
You know, I'm telling you, I am pre-scient here.
Hey.
This is going to be happening. You're going to hear about this on TV.
Let's see if you can patent it.
I don't think I can patent it. But you will see. This will happen. Upscale yuppie couples will be turning their kids over to the foster home.
To the foster system.
They're going to make them wards of the state.
Terrible.
I'm telling you, it's going to be happening. Trust me.
See, it's reasons like that why my emancipation was denied by USM, because parents started just emancipating their kids because they were lazy. Mm. And now USM does, it's awful. But yeah. Work it out.
Hail Mary.
Hail Mary.
The Hail Mary School of Parenting.
Okay. I'll be looking out for it.
They're not going to be, there's not going to be any emancipation. The thing is, you can't do it when they're 18 or 16. You got to do it when they're 10. No, like one. No.
Not even, no.
You might want to breastfeed your kid.
No, they don't let you do that anymore. If you're going to give it up, they don't even let you see it.
No. You breastfeed your kid, then you come up with some deal that you can't. You come up with some phony mental disease that you can't take care of your kids.
Oh, wait, no. They have the, what is it? The lighthouse. You can drop a baby off at a fire station. Any fire station or church.
Up till 17. No. Actually, there was... No. Actually, I take it back. There was a deal where the law was written a certain way, mm-hmm. that there was no age. So people were dropping teenagers off at the fire station.
That's awesome. Oh, my gosh. I want to interview the parent who does that just to be like, why? Take him now. That's awesome.
That's like the, 83rd trimester abortion.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's ridiculous.
But see, you just have to get yourself diagnosed with a fake mental illness. Mm. They'll take your kids away. Then you're all set.
Not necessarily, because you get parenting classes and... I worked for a group home for 4.5 years.
Well, but that's if you want your kids back. But if you don't want them, they're not going to make you have them. I don't know enough about it, but I'm just guessing.
They'll push them. Well, I was just telling her about somebody I know who just had her 7th, and because her 3-year-old girl, who's the only girl as of now, said she didn't want any more sisters, this woman just gave her kid. She was like, nope, no more girls. I'll only keep the boys. Literally. Not joking you. Not joking. Very serious that her 3-year-old girl wants to be the only girl. I'm like, oh, dear God. She had a set of twins and gave the girl away but kept the boy. Mm. Because her 3-year-old didn't want any more sisters.
That's one spoiled-ass little brat.
Yes, it is. Yep, her mother lives completely off the state. Completely. I mean, completely off the state. Has not worked since her first one was born, and he is now 7 or 8.
Hmm.
And she just part of it is because she just doesn't know any better, and the other part is because she figured out very quickly what could happen.
Oh, so what could happen all day?
Well, I mean, as far as the money she can make from this.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Unfortunately, her eldest son is already killing animals, so this should be an interesting one.
Oh, there's a new show referring to, new show on TV. It's on Showtime, actually. It's called Shameless.
Yes, William J. Macy. It's brilliant.
Have you seen it?
Yes, I saw a few episodes. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I watch every one.
I don't have cable, and so a friend of mine has cable, and he has them all saved, so I've been going over and watching. Oh my gosh, Kyle. So amazing.
So the whole storyline is this William J. Macy's like their dad.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty much like a narcissistic, drunk addict person.
Like, that's it. That's his life.
That's his life. He doesn't work.
Nope. He gets his social security check every...
And he gets his, like...
Pension.
He gets his aunt's social disability. He gets his check and he gets her social security check.
Oh, yeah.
His
aunt who's dead.
Who's dead, you know.
Yeah. He's still cashing her check and living in her house.
Yeah, they're living... The kids are all living in the house. And basically, it's five kids... And the oldest daughter's like 21. She takes care of everybody for mm-hmm. the most part. And there's like
and one. And always has, because yeah. their mother took off when the last one was born, who yeah. happens to be half black.
That's mulatto, which we think that it's probably done by.
So the littlest one is the only one who's mixed, and he's the last one, and the yeah. mom took off.
And they said, and the, if you watch the intro of the show, this little kid looks, he goes, surprisingly, my last sponsor.
Yeah.
So, that's the deal.
Yeah.
And so they had adventures like what was one of, you know, they had to, the Social Security was investigating them because.
Of the checks.
The aunt never showed up. Supposedly she was in a nursing home in Indiana somewhere. And so they had to have the woman here. So they went to the nursing home and they stole a girl.
Not they, him, the father.
Yeah. No, they went, actually, no.
Well, the first time the father brought someone home, but then the second time the... Who came through with the second home?
Well, no. What happened is their neighbor that helps them out all the time worked
right.
at a nursing home. So they found one woman who sort of fit the description a little bit.
That's
so
right.
they brought her home. And so she was like their fake aunt. Because she was senile and she, you know. And so they pulled it off.
Yep. That's right. You know. I forgot about that. Too for right. It's hilarious. It's like, and it's shameless. The name is
shameless.
Perfect.
It's truly shameless.
The name
shameless.
Is perfect. It's shameless. Oh, and the girl has a new boyfriend who happens to be like this richy, she thinks this like rich to do blah, blah, blah guy. And it turns out he's a thief for a living.
He just steals cars.
He steals cars for a living.
Yeah, he's always like driving a new fancy car because he just stole it.
Because he just, yeah. So she thinks that he's like this rough, tough, like expensive man. And he shows, he's like, no,
He's a thief.
Great, it's great.
And there's like, there's four kids.
I mean, he's got money. He definitely has money from what he does.
Yeah. But, well, she's like the oldest one. The next kid, he's like the smart one who like does things like takes ACTs for people for money and all this other stuff.
Yep.
And then the next kid, he's like very hardworking and industrious in ROTC, but he's gay.
He's gay and he hasn't come out yet.
And he's kind of come out.
So that's right, to the brother a little.
The family knows.
Oh, they know now? I think the brother knows. Okay.
And so and he was sleeping with like this Arab guy who owns a store. Owns a little store. And the next one is the boy, and he's like he's the one who kills animals and puts things in the microwave and all that stuff.
And then there's the little girl.
The little girl who's
I love her.
She's just like, I don't know. She was upset because they put the old lady back in her home, and so she stole this baby. And they had to come up with this big humongous scam to get her back. It was like everything was timed.
I didn't see that one.
It's the second to the, not this week's, but the week before.
Oh no.
And then the next one, and the youngest is the little mixed race baby who's not really, you know, they think that he's not,
obviously his father.
Frank is not his dad.
It's so hilarious.
But, so that's their little thing. They're always in some kind of trouble. They always have some bill that they need to pay, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Because dad, does, his check goes directly to him. He doesn't contribute to that household at all.
No.
The kids figure out how to pay the bills. The kids figure out everything all by themselves. He's never contributed.
No. Yeah. Never.
So they've always depended on themselves. And they do a pretty damn good job.
So.
Oh, yeah. So I'm talking about kids and fathering, right?
Yes. Oh.
Is that where you were going with that?
Yeah, that was kind of where I was going with my new plan. I'm writing a book, too.
So. Oh, yes. Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's going to be my next month. That's going to be my self-help book.
Yes. Book first.
The Hail Mary of Parenting.
Hail Mary of Parenting.
You throw your kids to the state. Hopefully they come out on the other side somewhat intact. And then you have all the time and energy to spend on them. And money.
Mm-hmm.
They may hate you. You had a good 20 years.
But that's no different than any teenager.
Yeah. They hate you anyway. And, you know, you probably weren't that great a parent anyway. You probably would have screwed your kids up even more. I was blamed on the state.
Exactly. Why take responsibility?
Responsibility. You know, What do you think this is America?
We don't have to raise our own children. We pay all kinds of people all the time to do it for us.
You know, there's a little Adam Carolla bit. One of them is, it's like rich man, poor man, right? But middle class people, here's one I should think of, is, you know, if you're really rich, you have a nanny take care of your kids, right? And if you're really poor, you have state welfare taking care of your kids. But middle class people take care of their own kids.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm calling in next time for that one.
Amen.
Next, he calls and looks for people. Yeah, I'm writing that one down.
I like that one.
Yeah.
I like that one.
So, yeah, really rich people have nannies.
Yeah, really poor people have the state.
And middle class people take care of their kids.
They have to raise their own damn kids.
Yep.
I should make that into a t-shirt. I have to raise my own damn kids.
You know, so.
Oh, my gosh.
So, we're back to, where the hell were we? You know, we sort of have this. So, let's go back. Oh, you have the one.
You want Kennison?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of fathers, speaking of having someone else raise your kids. Sam Kinison, right? If you remember Sam Kinison, I don't know if you guys remember. Maybe you're too old. I'm just an old man, so I remember these things.
He's not an old man.
He really is. He was in the 80s mostly. And he was this ex-preacher. And he was a, his thing is he would scream. Like, he would go, ah! You know, and that was his, he'd like punctuate with a scream, like he would say, you know, his whole thing was he was divorced 3 times. I want to steal a guy's bit, but I don't think I can do it justice. But the whole thing was, he goes in hell, he goes, you know, I go to hell, and goes a single person, devil goes, you know, here's fire, brimstone, and then it's your turn. He goes, I was married 3 times. Oh, he goes, and Satan goes, what about you? Well, I was married 3 times. No. He goes, what about you, Sam? He goes, I was married 3 times, And Satan goes, there's nothing we can do to you here. You want a job?
Oh,
jeez. But that's, I just slaughtered a guy's bitch. You know, and that was his thing. Or one of his favorite ones was he was talking about Ethiopia. That was like the thing.
Yeah.
He goes, he would do things like, you know, goes, why are we sending them food? We should send them U-Haul so they can go where the food is. You know, funny thing about that was, you know, no one wanted them people in where the food was. You know, they're always, you know, everybody's complaining about, you know, having foreigners in our town.
Oh, gosh.
You know, so that's.
Yeah.
They've taken our jobs. That's another. So, Sam Kinison, he was this pretty famous comic. He was known for being a hellraiser. There's a Yahoo, this happened not too long ago. A longtime friend of Sam Kinison said Thursday that he recently obtained DNA testing that shows the late comedian fathered a daughter with his ex-wife, and that he hopes the revelation will free him from years of unpaid child support penalties. Comic Carl Lebove filed a petition Thursday to try to invalidate a nearly 13-year-old agreement requiring him to make payments for the girl, who is now 21 years old, as of 2009, Lebove owed nearly $108,000 in back child support, according to a statement filed with his petition. The debt has left Lebove with a driver's license, a passport, and shoddy credit, he said. But he said any animosity he felt towards Kinison for sleeping with his now ex-wife during Kinison's hard-charging heyday in the late 80s is gone. I learned to forgive him for his actions, Lebove said outside of downtown Los Angeles courthouse Thursday. The comedian who opened for Kinison for years and was with him when he died in a car accident in California in 1992, Lebove is hoping that the release of child support obligations will allow him to drive himself to gigs from now on. Success is not guaranteed, said McCormick, executive director of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children, which is aiding Lebove in this case. The 52-year-old comic will have to show that he was coerced into signing the 1998 agreement. In the court findings, he claimed he was not fully informed of his rights before signing the agreement. In an interview, he said that his divorce from his ex-wife took 6 years, and the attorney never suggested he challenge the paternity of the child, even though his then-wife had told him that Kinnison was the girl's dad. Kinnison's brother, Bill, took a DNA test that showed the likelihood that his famous brother was the young woman's father. He said Thursday evening that while he had never met her, there were indications that the brash comic was her father. She looked like she'd be Sam's daughter, Bill Kinnison said. He noted that his brother and LeBeau both had lifestyles akin to rock stars during his lifetime. Sam and Carl had lived a lifestyle that was pretty promiscuous. Promiscuous, Bill said. He also acknowledged that large hurdles that LeBeau will face in trying to get his name cleared, although he understood why he was doing it. I'd want to get that off me too, he said. McCormick said LeBeau's fight should be aided by a 2004 appellate court ruling that states the government should correct mistakes in child support actions and minimize the harm and correct any injustice to that person. Despite all that, LeBeau's prospects for success are unclear. He's really in legal limbo. The hearing on LeBeau's petition is scheduled for March 28. LeBeau says he has a good relationship with a young woman who's likely Kinnison's daughter. He said it wasn't till she showed up at one of his performances 3 years ago that he had an opportunity to try to set the record straight on who her father was. She wants me to have my life back. She's my best friend's daughter. DNA testing submitted to the court Thursday shows LeBeau has a 0% probability of being her father. Additional tests from Kinnison's two brothers, one of who is now dead, show a 99.8% chance that she is related to them. LeBeau said he hopes that the woman who declined comment Thursday will one day be able to benefit from the late comic's estate. It is controlled by Bill Kinnison, who LeBeau accused of yesterday of forging estate planning documents and providing with an attorney who coerced him to signing a 1998 agreement requiring him to make child support payments. His attorney had an interest in not representing him zealously, McCormick said. Bill Kinnison denied LeBeau's accusations. There's no validity to that. Well, what would I get him an attorney, period, if I was going to keep anything hidden, he said. Also asking why he would take a DNA test years later. LeBeau said DNA testing was never considered during his divorce. Even though for years he had said he had been told that Kinnison's was the girl's father, not him. The revelation, along with the loss of Kinnison, sent LeBeau spiraling for several years, he said. He attempted suicide and drank heavily. Alcohol was the only way to get through my shows, he said. Bill Kinnison said LeBeau refused DNA testing at the time and other measures recommended by the attorney. He also said his late brother died $1 million in debt and the estate only makes modest earnings now. We barely keep it solvent, Bill Kinnison said. He said a biopic on Sam Kinnison had been contemplated for more than a decade, but he doesn't know whether it'll be made. The paternity testing and the prospect of having the child support debts erased have given LeBeau hope that it'll be healed completely. Stage is the only place I have my freedoms, he said.
Yeah, I still think that's the corniest line to end that with.
I wonder if the state will go after Sam Kinnison's estate for back child support. That would be
they
funny.
They should.
Here's Kit Sam Kinnison. He goes, I'm paying child support and I'm dead.
They probably should, but...
See, there's a case where you can get screwed. You know, your wife sleeps around.
Mm-hmm.
And she...
someone else's kid,
and you're paying. Because I think the way they do these things, it's it's usually in the best interest of the child. So someone must pay. So mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who,
but someone must.
It's got to be. It doesn't matter whether it's the real dad or the fake dad, or the cuckolded bastard who didn't know his wife was scamming.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, I feel
he sort of knew though.
Kitty, I feel bad that like he got. You know, screwed over. But at the same time, like he says, oh, I wouldn't have known to challenge the... Well, of course not. I hope that you were at least in love with the woman enough to... I mean, yes, she screwed you over, but of course there was no reason for you
looks
to...
Looks like you have a helper there helping you with your microphone.
Yeah, he's trying to. I don't know. I agree that the man shouldn't have to pay. It isn't his kid. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was really crappy of his friend to do that.
Okay. So, that's That wasn't as funny as I thought it was going to be. But okay. Let's we go on to our next topic. Here we go. Okay. Here's one that I thought, now speaking of like mating and how you pick your pair, how you pick up mates, you know, you don't have a copy of this one, so I'll read it.
Okay.
So, what was it, FYI.com or FYYLiving.com? Hey, there's the cat. He decides he's going to, hey. That's enough. The cat decides he's going to rub his ass all over the microphone. Okay. Now move them. You can move a little closer, actually. Hmm? Actually, it's better if you move a little closer. Okay. Like closer to your mouth.
Okay.
Like this far.
Okay.
Because then I can turn it down. I don't have to crank it up so high.
Okay.
Okay, much better.
Sorry.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Hey, we're learning. It's a learning process. Here's a new one. An online survey was carried out to test the hypothesis. There, here we go. In FYIliving.com, ideal mates selected differently by gender. This is somewhat, an online survey was carried out to test the hypothesis. That the magnitude of sex differences and preference for age and physical attractiveness over good financial prospects of the partner would decrease with increasing status. The hypothesis was accepted only partially as the gender differentiation disappeared for physical attractiveness over good financial prospects with increasing control of resources. At the same time, females continued to prefer older and wealthier males with increasing resource control, which caused the hypothesis to be rejected. Numerous reports are available suggesting the existence of sexual asymmetry in human mate preferences. Males prefer youth and physical attractiveness as decisive factors in choosing a female partner, whereas females have a preference for resource acquisition characteristics. This mating behavior has been widely debated, and studies have shown that in societies with greater educational and financial gender equity, women express preferences similar to men. Therefore, the authors investigated the contribution of gender-specific status and mate preferences for age and physical attractiveness. It was hypothesized the magnitude of these individual differences would be expected to be different among females and males. So basically, they connected an online survey using 6,000 participants.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically, it was 18 to 35 years old, about 1,800 females and 1,900 males who reported completely heterosexual orientation were included in the analysis. Most of the participants were middle income and university college students.
Okay.
They asked the partners whether they were what the ideal partner age and the maximum and minimum ages and years to prefer a potential partner. And they basically asked them things like good financial prospects and physical attractiveness as target characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Status was assessed using the measures of resource control, namely financial independence, importance of financial independence, control of finances, importance of having a career, maximum level education, and input decisions in the home and workplace. Basically, what they found out was there was a significant difference in the magnitude of age preference, ideal age difference between self and partner,
mm-hmm.
and maximum or minimum tolerated age between the genders. Females with high financial independence, power, and ambition outnumbered males in the magnitude of response over their preferences not only for ideal age difference between self and partner, but also maximum or minimum age tolerated for their partner. Females with high financial independence and power were at par with their preferences for male for physical attractiveness over good financial prospects. What I think that means is women were more flexible in the age.
Mm-hmm.
They would go older or younger
if they were already stable themselves.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. But for men, not so much.
Yes. Men, we still
prefer the younger, better looking women.
Guys like young hotties.
Shallow is what that's translating as. Men are shallow.
Yes. the proper term would be visually stimulated.
You're
very visual.
Shallow.
Yeah. Like I said.
Okay. That sounds about right. I definitely would agree with that.
Financial independence and physical attractiveness is a covariant of resource control. Blah, blah, blah. Okay.
But I bet you that poor men feel the same way as rich men do, but poor women definitely don't feel the same way as rich women.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. Poor women want a rich man, and poor men still want a good-looking younger woman.
Obviously.
I'm just going to repeat. Shallow.
You know.
Okay.
Usually, let's see, they said females could have probably interpreted financial independence as an independence from partner, whereas males could have interpreted it as independence from parents or loans. While females could have interpreted physical attractiveness as mates with good genes for creating a family,
mm-hmm.
males could have interpreted it as mates with fertility and good reproductive capacity.
Of course.
Besides, the participants belong to an undergraduate level and their responses cannot be generalized to the overall population, which means young people have different ideas about mm-hmm. that stuff. Basically, what they said was, different sex differences, physical attractiveness, and good financial prospects, the differences, but when financial independence and power was high. So, let's see. So it will support the prediction of economic constraints with a female contributing to sex differences in selecting an ideal mate. However, inverse relationship between financially independent women preferring younger mates rejects the hypothesis that women's preferences would shift in a direction typical of men. Financially independent preferring physical attractiveness as well as older mates suggests a mixed response and a greater complexity in the role of resource control on the mate preference, which needs further investigation. Basically, if you want a rich girlfriend, you need to be a hot older guy. So if you're a hot older guy, you can score yourself a rich chick who's actually pretty attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's not so bad.
Not really.
Nope. So, hey.
She wants someone that can keep up with her.
Yep. Better hit the gym, old man. That's basically what that says.
It says women's standards are here and men's standards.
Or if you're older and in good, decent looking, and you have a reasonable lot of money, you can have the hot younger chick with money.
Have your cake and eat it too, homie. Have your cake and eat it too.
Hey, that's not so bad. Hey, I'll tell you, when I was a young man, I was probably, when you're a 20 something guy, you're pretty much shit. I don't know if it matters as much now, but when I was a kid, when I was like 20 something, no one wanted to deal with you. They just told you to go carry things.
27's different now.
20-something-year-old guys.
27, 20, well, 26, 27, 28. Especially if you're an older woman looking for a younger man. Guys my age now, I mean, I know several men my age who own their own business already. I mean,
I'm talking about 20-something, like 21, 22,
oh, gosh, 23. No. For me, no. For somebody who's 21, 22, 23, 24, that's, yeah.
Not even the 21-year-old girls want to talk to you.
No. Nope.
You know.
Nope.
And you would have your art. You might, you know.
There's nothing that you can do for me, honey, that I can't do for
you. You may have a shot of the 16-year-old severe daddy issues. But that would just be illegal.
Well, that's just jailbait.
Yes.
Yeah, no, there's
nothing. That's why they have, what do you think guys in that age use roofies? Do crazy shit.
No.
Because that's their only shot.
A 21-year-old could do absolutely nothing for me. Ugh, 20 or 22-year-old or a 23-year-old, I'm finding out.
Okay. I was a young man. I was a serviceman when I was 23 years old.
Mm.
I was definitely, you know, I have to say, if you're a guy, your sweet spot is probably like between 29, 35, 36, because you got a range. Your range is really good. You can go younger, you can go quite a bit older.
That's
and
true.
Still be in that range.
And still be okay, yeah.
And still be okay.
Absolutely.
It's my guess. Let's see. What's our next article here?
Speaking of young males.
Oh, which one?
I just think drinking.
Oh, yeah. That's the drinking one. Okay, let's go find that. Let's, you go, that's one you can read.
Okay. This is from Mail Online. Is that right?
Yes.
U.S. drinks the lowest amount of alcohol in developed world, figures reveal, which I think is lame.
We're you know what? Why does this keep? Why do this is basically the Mail Online, which is the Daily Mail, which is a British paper.
Okay.
They hate America.
They just wanted to prove how much kind of a
How big a pussies we are even in drinking.
That's what I was gonna say. They wanted to prove that we were pussies all the way. Love it. Okay. The average American drinks 470 pints of beer a year. 37% of population abstain. Okay. The U.S. has one of the lowest rates of drinking in the developed world, new figures have revealed. Average American drinks just 9.4 liters of alcohol a year, the same as 470 pints of mild beer or 31 glasses of wine. 31 glasses of wine per one person for a year.
Where's this?
Lame.
Oh, yeah, that's nothing.
Lame.
I don't think I even drink that much. What's 31 glasses a year, which would basically be less than one a week?
Oh, yeah, no, that's lame. I have a bottle. Oh, gosh, I can't even talk to you. Yeah. The average American drink, the figure is much lower than Europe, where the average British drinks sinks 1,100 pints of beer each year, and Russians have 1,350 pints of beer and 90 bottles of vodka. Whew.
Well, that's three bottles of vodka every month.
That's still a lot to me.
And that's a lot for kids and really old people.
It's a lot.
There's a reason why Russians are depopulating, because they're too drunk to have sex.
I thought you were going to say, like, liver damage.
No. I just can't get up because they're too drunk.
Maps released.
Liver damage never kept anybody from trying to have sex. But if you drink too much, you're like,
oh my god,
you can't get it up.
That's not where I thought you were going with that. That is awesome. Maps released by the World Health Authority show that the average American drinks between 7.5 and 10 liters of pure alcohol each year. The preferred drink in the U.S. is beer, accounting for 53% of alcohol consumption, whereas in France, the favorite drink is wine, and in Russia, vodka.
Vodka.
Spirits make up 31% of alcohol consumption in the U.S., and wine accounts for just 16%. But the region also has one of the highest rates of alcohol-related deaths, coming second only to behind Europe. In America, 31% of all deaths of 15 to 29-year-olds were alcohol-related. That is astounding, considering we have the lowest drinking.
We just drink we drink our 31 glasses of wine in one sitting.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Americans are known, you know. I bet in college you binge drink a lot. Like, I would not, some people would drink all the time, but I was always the kind of person, I didn't drink every day.
But I think the difference, I mean, from what I gather, is there's so many kids who go to college for the first time, and that's the first time that they're drinking mass amounts, and they don't know their limits. And that's what you get, the 15 to 29-year-olds who are, you know, that's the 18, 19, 20, 21, who are, you know, going out for one weekend and dying because they walk off a roof because they're blacked out.
Oh.
Like, that's where that age group is coming in. It's just not knowing your limits, or not, because you didn't have it before. You didn't grow up with it. You know, at home, we grew up with it. In France, they grew up with it. It's something it's in your life, your whole life. Your parents give it to you at 7 and 8. But here, it's so regulated.
You have to protect the children.
Yes, protect the children. Okay. The U.S. also has one of the... Oh, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah. The U.S. also has one of the highest rates of people who abstain from drinking, with 35% of residents preferring not to drink. The average drinker in the U.K. has 15.5 liters of pure alcohol a year, the equivalent of 775 pints of beer. That's the same as 516 glasses of strong wine or 1,000 shots of whiskey or other spirits. The only East European countries such as Russia have higher rates of drinking than the UK.
And I tell you the truth, there's a lot of truth to that because the ugly tourist of the world is not the American.
Mm-mm.
It's the Brits. They leave their town, they leave and they go crazy and they drink a lot and they don't tip, according to my friends who work in the tourism industry.
Really?
Yes. Supposedly. Well, I think Europeans don't tip because they think people get paid in America.
Well,
but people don't get paid in America.
Isn't it included, though, most places in Europe? The tip is included, so they don't even think about it.
Oh, I've got a tip story.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. I was in Germany this Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I was in Germany. I was at this club. And it was like club music, in really. Mm-hmm. So, and my friend and I, we get a beer. And she orders from the menu. Get us both Heineken. She mm-hmm. orders and talks personally exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the check and I pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like €8. I give her €10. And she brings me €2 back. I put it back. And she goes, "Thank you very much," in perfect English. I did not say a word to this person. You know, she just said, you know, mm-hmm. this is in Austria. This is like where there's no really Americans. Mm-hmm. It's not even like a touristy place. This was like a total locals joint.
Too. Okay, okay.
I gave her a two euro tip, and she said, "Thank you very much," in perfect English.
Okay.
I did not say a word to this woman. She had no idea I was an American. I guess nothing screams American like a two euro tip.
Yeah.
A 2 euro tip. I guess if you're really poor, if you throw a lot of money around, you're really rich, I guess you can... You could be a foreign, you could be a German,
mm-hmm.
or you're just, you know,
an American.
You're cheap.
And you give a 2 euro tip.
You don't tip at all. But a 2 euro tip screams American because you tip like a certain percentage.
Gotcha.
and that night, like, I drank a lot.
Ooh.
It was the only time we went to, like, I was always one up early with my friend, and I was always waking her up.
Yep.
That was the only morning that she woke me up. Because I did not turn down drinks.
Oh.
Supposedly, her friend's boyfriend was some rich banker, somebody in Austria. And so there was like bottles of champagne all over the place.
Oh,
and these little cheesy schnapp bottles. I didn't turn one of them down when they came by my way. I was so drunk that, you know, I was trying to teach them how to tell the Germans how to say, "Get your drink on" in English.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty funny.
Get your drink on.
And I pretty much was doing it.
You were showing him how it's
done. Oh, and I woke up the next morning. I was like, "Sleepy, we're not going to Salzburg.
Get her done."
No. Woke me up. I ended up getting up and going, like, ugh. It was like I haven't had a hangover like that in a long time. I'm sleepy. No, I'm sleepy. So we got up, had breakfast because they closed the place. The hotel had breakfast. They closed at like 10.
Yeah.
So you had to get
up and like go.
Get breakfast. Then I was up, so we went to Salzburg.
Oh my gosh. I couldn't imagine.
I did not want to get up. I did not want to get out of bed.
I wouldn't either.
But I did.
Oh my gosh. Oh, where were we?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Alcohol. In Russia, the average drinker consumes a staggering 27 liters of pure alcohol a year. And in Moldova, 23 liters a year. On average, Russians drink 1,350 pints of beer a year and 90 bottles of vodka. In France, the majority of adults drink wine, taking their average consumption to 1,490 units a year. That's roughly 500 glasses of wine, which, like I was saying earlier, it's pretty good. It's a good average. Areas of the map that are colored green show strict Muslim countries such as Iran, Iraq, and Afghanistan, where drinking is banned. Their alcohol consumption is less than 250 units a year, or just over 120 pints of beer.
They just do heroin.
They just skip the stupid stuff and get right to the good stuff.
They got a lot of it around.
What does my sister say? Crack is a hell of a drug. I'm like, oh my gosh.
So your sister knows this.
She better not. The research was...
You know where she got that from?
Where?
Dave Chappelle.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, did you see the one where... Cocaine is a hell of a drug. Where the head that ripped the Rick James episode.
Oh, Rick James, yes, yes.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Yes, I'm Rick James. Yeah. Oh, Lord. The research was carried out by the World Health Organization, which measured alcohol consumption between 2000 and 2005. Dr. Ala Alwan of WHO, Assistant Director General for Non-Communicable Diseases and Mental Health, said, many countries recognize the serious public health problems caused by the harmful use of alcohol and have taken steps to prevent the health and social burdens that treat those in need of care. But clearly, much more needs to be done to reduce the loss of life and suffering associated with harmful alcoholic use. In the U.S., male drinkers drank twice as much as females. Regular male drinkers consumed 2,000 units of alcohol compared with just 850 for women. In Britain, men also drank around twice as much as women during the same period. Oh, wow, that's just so much alcohol. The average consumption for males was 22 liters of pure alcohol a year compared with just 9.5 liters to women. But when the figures include people who did not drink, the average person drank just 13.4 liters of alcohol a year, which is 1,340 units of alcohol or 670 pints of beer.
You know, I like my personal favorite. You ever watch like Dateline, places like that? They're like, college binge drinking, is it a new trend? It's like, come on.
This has been going on forever and ever and ever and ever.
I went to college in the 80s.
Wait, there's a new show about that.
You could actually go to ask, back then, you could ask somebody at a gas station if they're 21 to buy you beer, odds on they would buy you beer. Like, depends on what part of town you went to.
Yeah.
Like, if you went to the, you know, went to the one part of town, the problem is they charge you like $13 for a 6-pack of Budweiser because you got no change back.
Yep, exactly, exactly.
You know, they would take, so you can get that drunk. Because you couldn't
spend that much money.
Nah, you know that kind of money.
Oh my gosh, yeah, no. Not, I mean, now parents are buying alcohol for their kids, so.
Well, not nowadays. Like, if you had a party with alcohol
there were so many stories in high school about parents, like, supplying. I'd rather they drink here.
Oh, in high school, but now? If word got out, and it does nowadays, it would show up on somebody's Facebook profile. You would end up on the news.
I hope so.
Like, you would end up on the news, and they'd be talking about you on the local talk show in the morning.
Good.
You know.
Exactly.
For good or bad.
Yeah.
But still, you can't do it. Like, somebody asked me, can you buy me some booze? I'm like, F no.
No. Sorry.
And they were probably 19. I mean, they were 19, 20. I was like, no way. I got too much to lose.
Yeah, no, it's...
I got no problem. You know, if you're over 18, I don't care if you drink. But.
Well, my sister and her friends, I never bought alcohol for them. I think one time I let them drink wine because they all thought I was a pussy for drinking wine. They're like, you don't know how to drink. And I'm like, oh, really?
Oh, here, so you had to show up.
Have some wine.
So did you trade like wine for crack?
No.
Like, you know, I remember when I was in high school, right? This is ancient history. It was way easier to get weed than it was liquor. By like a lot.
No, it's about...
Like, if you had a good source where you could get booze underage, you kept it to yourself. Like, if you knew a place would serve,
yeah,
like, sell you beer, you got that to yourself. Because you don't want every Tom, Dick, and Harry showing up
with
no ID buying beer.
No, most of my friends, their parents bought for them.
Really?
Yeah.
My parents never bought beer for me.
Most of my friends, their parents or their older siblings.
I would never ask my parents to buy me beer.
No, they never had to. Their parents were just like, look, I know you're drinking, so if you're going to get it, just let me know. At least I know you're doing it here. It blew my mind.
You know, drinking and sex and things like that, my parents were the don't ask, don't tell policy. Don't ask us for permission and we won't tell you no. You pretend like you don't drink, and you pretend like you don't drink.
My parents, I was emancipated, so my parents, our relationship was slightly different, but I think on some level they knew, but I was a good kid. I didn't get into trouble. I wasn't pregnant. I wasn't promiscuous, so they kind of, you know, just...
Not that they knew.
Hmm?
Not that they knew.
No, actually, I was pretty open with my mom because she wasn't my birth mother.
I see.
Our relationship was actually really different. So for the most part, she kind of knew everything. I mean, if I drank, I'd call and be like, look, nobody's sober, so I'll see you in the morning. She's like, okay, as long as you're here for church. Because at that point, I was kind of like, okay, you're not a bad kid, so I can't really be mad at you. You're being responsible.
So you were adopted?
Not officially, no, I got emancipated.
Okay.
So they never officially adopted me, no, but they're my parents.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have to sort that one out someday because I'm confused.
There's all kinds of stories, yeah.
Another onion to peel back for another show.
Another show. Lots of layers.
This is interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I told you I have lots of layers, lots and lots.
Renee the onion.
And it gets so much more complicated. I have, you know, four siblings, but only two of them are actually related to me. Yeah, it gets.
I have one sibling. He's actually related to me, and sometimes I think that's unfortunate.
No, I don't feel that way about mine, but
I don't really feel that way about my brother. But I'm like, you know, Mark.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, where were we? We're talking about how men here drink a lot.
Oh, yeah.
The figures show that the average male drinker in the U.S. drinks 1,000 pints of beer or 220 bottles of wine throughout the year, but women drink just 42 pints of beer or 280 glasses of wine. 1 liter of pure alcohol contains 1,000 milliliters. There are 10 milliliters in every unit of alcohol. Excuse me. The research also revealed which drinks people in each country prefer. Drinks in Britain and the U.S., mainly beer, France, wine, Russia, spirits. The research also found that the highest number of alcoholic-related deaths occurred in Europe and America in those aged between 15 and 29. Worryingly, in Europe, just over 35% of deaths in that age groups were attributed to alcohol. Countries where people drank the least included parts of the developing world such as Africa and Asia, but these countries also showed the biggest increases in drinking in line with rapid economic development, which I think is really interesting.
So poor dirt farmers don't drink very much.
Not right now, but as the economy changes, they start to drink more.
Well, because they have access to more liquor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So if you herd goats, you're probably not going to drink that much. Mainly because you have to make it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, for the longest time, my birth mother made ginger beer.
Yep.
And you can, if you let it ferment long enough, it becomes alcohol. But yeah, that was what I grew up on, was homemade ginger beer from our kitchen in these big basin bottles. Yeah, it was amazing.
My great-grandfather used to make really bad wine. My father used to tell me stories about how it was a secret recipe. He wouldn't share it. But most of the time, you probably didn't want
to. No, exactly.
Oh, yeah. It's horrible.
Oh, terrible.
I never drank any, and I feel like I'm privileged. Something's older doesn't necessarily matter.
Exactly. Leave it in the past. The average worldwide consumption in 2005 was equal to 6.13 liters of pure alcohol per person aged 15 years old or older, according to the report. A World Health Organization spokesman said analysis from 2001 through 2005 showed countries in the WHO, Americas, European, Eastern Mediterranean, and the Western Pacific regions had relatively stable consumption levels during that time, but marked increases were seen in Africa and Southeast Asia during the 5-year period. Despite widespread consumption, most people do not drink. Almost half of all men and 2/3 of women did not consume alcohol in 2005, according to the latest information made available in the report. Abstention rates are low in high-income, high-consumption countries and higher in North America and South Asian countries, excuse me. But those who do drink in countries with high abstention rates consume alcohol at high levels. Too few countries use effective policy options to prevent death, disease, and injury from alcohol. From 1999, when WHO first began to report on alcohol policies, at least 34% of countries adopted some type of formal policy to reduce harmful use of alcohol. Restrictions on alcohol, marketing, and on drunk driving have increased, but there are no clear trends on most preventative measures. Many countries have weak alcohol policies and prevention programs. Which, again, yeah, I mean, South Africa, I think. No, last I knew, there wasn't a drinking age, to my knowledge. I mean, my 6-year-old cousin went to the store and picked up booze and cigarettes from my aunts. So
I used to buy cigarettes from my parents when I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
Basically, it was a little store 2 doors down from my grandma.
Yeah.
And they knew who I was.
Yep, exactly. They knew who you were getting it for. They knew who it was for. You know, yeah, that's kind of how it still is at home right now. Or at least the last time I was there, it hasn't changed too much, my brother said.
Yeah. My parents sent me across the board to Canada steal duty-free cigarettes. But, you know, they were, you know, when I came across the board with my jacket full of cigarettes,
oh my gosh,
you know, they were a little suspicious. Especially when I was on foot.
Oh my gosh.
In Jackman, Maine.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
That's, I made that.
Wow. Yeah, I know, because you're not from.
They're a little suspicious. My parents had to say. Actually, the funny thing is, I remember, I'll tell you, I lived in Virginia when I was like 5.
Mm.
You know how much cigarettes cost? I remember my mother buying a carton for $2.50.
Oh my gosh.
And that's when they were like $5 or $6 in the Northeast.
Oh my gosh.
And I remember one time when I was in service and I was on the ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And once you got up past international waters, the cigarettes were, you know, there was no taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I could buy a carton of Marlboros for $6.50.
Jeez.
That was definitely like, I bought a carton. I didn't even smoke. I bought them for if I went to Australia. A lot of Aussies and that smoke. And they like American cigarettes.
Yeah.
So I said if I went to somebody's house, I'd bring them cigarettes. And it would be just like a little present. I ended up not doing anything. So I kept them. I kept them in my locker. And then the store was closed for 2 weeks for inventory. And so all the smokers were jonesing for butts.
That's
and I
awesome.
Had a stash.
Awesome.
I had my friend who was running the laundry. I said, iron my uniforms and I'll give you a couple packs of smokes.
Nice.
You know, I'll give you a pack now and a pack when you get done. And
nice little business there.
And so I had people doing shit for me for like 2 weeks once. And after that, they're like, fuck you. Why are you doing shit for me no more?
You awful person.
So can you fix this for me? I'll give you a pack of bots.
Nice.
It was like prison. Except now that in prison, they don't have cigarettes. You can't smoke. Or you can't, like, buy cigarettes.
Really?
You can't buy cigarettes, I think, at the kiosk. You're not allowed to smoke at Cumberland County Jail. No smoking.
Wow.
The currency is cup of soup noodles. That's the,
Sorry, I was totally thirsty. Cup of soup, no more smoking.
There probably is smoking. I don't know where, but it's like... But it's like cup of soup noodles, the little cups noodles.
I'll give you 3 packs of ramen for.
And that's what they used to play like for gambling, and that was like the currency. Don't ask me how I know that.
I'm not going to.
So I guess we're like an hour. So I guess we can end the show.
Oh my goodness!
We have to tell people our stuff. Hold on.
Oh yeah.
One day you're gonna have to learn this.
I know I do, don't I?
You will.
Okay.
Like Kate.
I'll keep working on it. I have a pretty bad memory, and I have no short-term memory, literally. So I'll
What were we talking about? I don't remember.
I have to learn your stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, here is our stuff. Okay, hold on. I have to read it myself. I used to have... the old show, I had it memorized. I used to tell Kate to remember it. She'd always screw it up.
Yeah, I remember that. Cause she'd be like, no, you guys were arguing about the email address the last show that I listened to.
Like,
you were like, how do you not know the email? She's like, of course I know the email. You're like, no, Kate, you don't know the email.
So tell everybody what the email address is.
And of course she didn't know it.
It's like the easiest one to remember. It was talesfromthecounter@gmail.com. How hard is that?
Tales from the Counter?
Yeah, that was my old, the old show.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Now, the new email, we'll go back to our new stuff. The new email address is intellectuallyshallow@gmail.com.
Yes.
The voicemail, always leave us a message at 207-619-3862. You can Twitter us. You can follow us on Twitter at http://twitter.com. Just look up iShallowShow. And also, we have a Facebook profile fan group. So if you do a search on Intellectually Shallow, you will come up with that. I guess the show is over.
Good night.
Good night. Bye, everybody.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening.